It's a sunny afternoon, but not yet summertime, as the Kinks song would have it. It's April, and the book world is hardly complaining about the weather. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. The London Book Fair opened on Monday under blue skies, but even as the sunlight streamed through the halls at Olympia, all was not sunny for the book world. And Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, joins me now for more about the weather and the book business. Andrew, good to see you in London.
Hey there, Chris. Good to see you.
The London Book Fair is in a new home this year. It's moved to Olympia from Earl's Court. Not such a great distance, but for many in the book business, a really big move. What's your perceptions of the show so far?
I think the show came off very, very well. Certainly much better than I had anticipated, I have to say. The Olympia is obviously tighter than the more spacious Earl's Court was, so I think it was a little tougher to navigate some of the more narrow aisles of the show floor. But overall, London has always prided itself on being a more intimate fair than, say, Frankfurt or Book Expo America, and it's even more intimate now, so all the better. I think we saw what everyone probably expected, which was a lot of people were lost on day one, not knowing where anything was. But by day two, that had noticeably subsided, and more people had their bearings and were able to take stock of the really charming classic building that is Olympia. And with the sun streaming through that lovely glass roof, as you suggested, it was pretty lovely at times, actually. And you don't often get to say that at a book fair when you're stuck under the fluorescent lights all day. But I would also point out that sunshine, that probably was the most key element of all of making this work. You know, it's been a stunning few days here in London, and that has really made travel issues moot. So everyone was happily walking to Olympia every day. So some of the transport concerns that were initially, you know, brought up by people, they simply didn't happen. Everyone was walking, so nobody was piling onto buses. And everyone was happy to be walking through West London, too, in 70-degree weather. Now consider the alternative. It's 45 and rainy, typical London weather. And all of these thousands of fairgoers are cold and wet and jammed in the aisles with their wet coats, and they're late for their meetings. And after they've been waiting for a bus for too long, and they're lost. They don't know where their booth is. So, you know, I think the heavens get a big assist for the success of this first year back at Olympia.
You really worry me as an Irishman, Andrew, because if you talk about the rain, you're going to jinx it. But I think you make a terrific point. It's been terrific to walk around London in this great sunshine and to enjoy a book show that is really a different form than others that I've been to. It's not just the setting, but there seems to be, as you say, a kind of an intimacy. People are closer together, but friendlier.
Absolutely. I think that's always been one of the hallmarks of the London Book Fair, is that, you know, you're in the city of Shakespeare. You know, there's just something charming about being in London for a book fair. In addition to being, you know, getting a lot of work done, people also just really seem to enjoy themselves here. And that really comes through on the floor.
And it's obvious that a lot of the British publishers particularly really love books. So that's also something great to see. And there's been some news made here during the fair, not at the fair, but during the fair. And not surprisingly, news came from Seattle yet again. We've got agreement between HarperCollins and Amazon.
Yeah, you know, we've seen this reported as ending an impasse, to which I now have to say, what impasse? You know, we talked about this a bit last week. Business Insider had a Business Insider article had set tongues wagging with a piece suggesting that HarperCollins could be the next Hachette. But, you know, that really wasn't based on any real reporting that I could see. People were sort of alleging that it was actually a leak from, because Business Insider is actually, I believe, owned, or at least Jeff Bezos is a shareholder in it. But Harper, I have to tell you, from the beginning, HarperCollins officials told us at PW on background that they were shocked by that piece. They didn't know that there was any impasse. They didn't think there was any impasse. And they saw that negotiations were just progressing normally. And indeed, that seems to have been the case. They did strike a deal. They announced it this week at the book fair. And once again, we don't know what those terms are. The terms are confidential. We know it's a multi-year deal. We know it's on some form of agency model for ebooks. The print is also covered by this also. But we're not allowed to know the exact terms of what this is, which I find most troubling. I'm sure we'll be talking more about that in the future. But notably, this deal means that four of the big five publishers now have new terms of sale deals with Amazon, and they're multi-year deals. And that leaves only the biggest publisher, which is Penguin Random House. And to me, that's the most exciting publisher of all. They're the biggest. They control 50% of the bestseller list. So we will see what happens with Penguin Random House.
Well, we may have sun in the weather forecast here in London, but there's definitely some fog in that agreement between HarperCollins and Amazon. You make a great point there. Now, The London Book Fair is preceded on Monday with something called the Digital Minds Conference. It's a kind of an attempt for the publishers to focus on publish on technology and publishing for a single day. And Amazon was there to talk. And you say you have seen two Amazons, a kind of split personality about that or split perception about that big company hanging over the show. And tell us about which is which. So there's the trade perception and the perception in the so-called author's headquarters.
Yeah, you know, I've really begun to notice this over the last couple of years at book fairs, but this year it's really pronounced because you have the author's HQ, which is where the indie publishers and the self-publishers are, and they're upstairs. So you have upstairs Amazon and downstairs Amazon at the book fair this year. So, as you mentioned, at the Digital Minds meeting, Amazon fear kind of snuck in right away. David Nichols, best-selling author of One Day, in his opening keynote mentioned a ruthless and predatory competitor, we all know who that is, and a Guardian journalist also ran a whole session on Amazon and sort of suggested that they were poised, if not to fall, then to weaken in the coming years, though he did laud them for a lot of their work as well. And then the Harper News, obviously. There was the usual grumbling among publishers about Amazon and its market share and its tactics as a bully, etc. Of course, they dare not speak those fears too loudly. You know, Amazon might hear them and there might be retribution. So, you know, it's strange on the show floor. But then, you know, you go upstairs to where Authors HQ is and the self-publishers, and there's panel after panel that is jam-packed of people who are just singing Amazon's praises. They love the Kindle Direct platform. It's changed their lives. It's given them an opportunity to make money and come to market and realize their dreams as writers. They're publishing 3 or 4 books a year, and they see traditional publishers as the problem. You know, you've got the traditional publishers downstairs who see Amazon as being the problem, and you've got the Amazon boosters upstairs who see traditional publishers as the problem. And of course, there's a healthy cohort that travel in between, obviously, some more nuanced views, shall we say. But I mean, I was really struck at one of the panels that I went to how down on traditional publishers some of these authors are. You know, a lot of them had been published by traditional presses. C.J. Lyon is one example. She's a writer who was originally published by a major in the States, and she moved over and started publishing with Kindle Direct, and she's now making much more money and publishing more books than ever. So it's interesting. There are two Amazons. There's the Amazons for the self-published, the Amazon that the self-publishers see, which is a savior, and then there's the Amazon that the publishers see downstairs, which is the bully. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out over coming book fairs.
You're right. And, you know, a fascinating insight you've got there, Andrew, and it struck me that it is not only that it is Amazon, but they're American. And to hear that here in London really says a lot. Amazon and Google, for that matter, which is about to be sued by the EU for a variety of monopolistic practices, really are seen as kind of the American interlopers, among other things. It's not just technology. It's a kind of us versus them situation. And to have those local authors really celebrating Amazon, that says a lot, I think.
I agree. It does say a lot. And you're absolutely right. And these were British authors. There was one American author. C.J. Lyon is an American author, but the others were British authors. And you know, I think when you get sued by the EU, it's just a sign that you've arrived. You know, that you've gotten so big that, you know, somebody's got to take you down a peg.
And you listen, Google can just whisper in somebody's ear, and suddenly there's a lawsuit about those laws in France and England. France and Germany that protect the price of books and protect bookstores. If they're looking for, you know, non-competitive practices, they're all over the place.
Indeed. You know, and you remember that, you know, the French sued, right? And they won. They beat Google on their scanning suit. But then the French publishers all made a deal with Google anyway. So it's just a way to bring people to the table, I think.
Well, obviously, trade books aren't the only part of the discussion here. The London Book Fair brings together publishers from the scholarly world, from the STM world. And you attended a pretty interesting discussion about open access that featured Michael Cairns of Publishing Technology.
Yeah, this was in the faculty, which is the little stage in the scholarly publishing area of the London Book Fair. And they hosted a really great session entitled What is a Publisher Now?, where they talked about open access and other developments. And it featured some great speakers, including Michael Cairns from Publishing Technology, as you mentioned, and the managing director of the Nature Publishing Group, Stephen Inchcombe. And at one point, the moderator of the panel, which is the ALPSP director, Audrey McCullough, just decided to cut in and ask a question about open access. And she asked the panel, one of the researchers on the panel, despite everything that they've attempted to do with it, has open access just made scholarly publishing at this point more complicated? And the response from Martin Wolf, who's a researcher at the University of Liverpool, was, hell yes. And he's right. I mean, it hasn't really disrupted publishing. Everyone on the panel was eager to say open access hasn't disrupted anything, that really it's enhanced things. But it's also created this really complicated network of funding and compliance and government compliance and who's going to cover the costs and libraries as funders and all of these questions. And it really has left researchers and publishers in a role of, you know, just things are a little more complicated right now. But Stephen Inchcombe, who's the managing director at Nature, had a really great perspective on all of this. He, you know, at the end of the panel, he reminded everybody that it's still early days in all of this, and that we have to remember that open access is just one part of the open research movement that's going on now, and that science is this massively collaborative venture, and open access is about making that better, is about making that more collaborative. So he warned everybody to keep their eye on the bigger picture, which is improving access to research, improving scholarly communication, and that all of the other little difficulties we're having with the transition to open access would soon pass. But keep your eye on the prize. I thought that was great perspective.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, I moderated a panel discussion on open access for Copyright Clearance Center, and we heard pretty much the same thing. And the way I look at it is, you know, at one point we all thought there was going to be one flavor of open access. Well, we find out a few years down the road that there are, you know, 26 flavors or whatever the number was for the Howard Johnson's chain. There are a lot of flavors of open access. Depends what you mean by open, for example. And yes, this has made life more complicated, but it's brought people together. We saw we had somebody from the research part of the world, from the institutional library part of the world. We had a couple of publishers, and the effort really is made to listen to each other's concerns and try to find ways to move forward. And in a sense, I'll steal this line from Joe Esposito, a blogger for Scholarly Kitchen: the open access movement has matured in a way, kind of moving out of Woodstock and, if not into Wall Street, certainly into a world where this is a business proposition and a business challenge.
Absolutely. And you know, I think this is one of the reasons why I love book fairs like this, too, is that you get the scholarly publishing discussion in the same hall as the trade scholarly publishing discussion, or the trade discussion. And I really wish that some of the trade publishers would walk up and see what's going on in the scholarly publishing, because they would realize that, you know, the world is not, it may be changing, but the sky is not falling on them. There's a lot of lessons that can be brought between the two publishing worlds now, and it's helpful to have those discussions under one roof. Even if we're not all sharing that information. But I learned a lot from this discussion, and I learned a lot from both parts of the fair, the trade and the scholarly publishing.
Maybe in this more intimate space of the Olympia Hall, those discussions will happen more often.
Well, I can hear them, yeah.
Exactly. Well, reporting from London, we've been speaking with Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly. Thanks so much, and great to see you.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Briskey of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.